Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story?
Hello, Weirdsville. Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Hope everyone's doing very well. Hope everyone is cheery and dry. I say that because we have got a ton of rain. Not me so much, but my co-host has certainly got a ton of rain here lately. But we are so excited to be with you today and just have a great discussion and talk about all the weird, fun, interesting, sometimes a little bit sad, but we always try to put a positive spin on it. I am one of your co-hosts, Barry Johnston. With me, as always, the professor, Mr. Adam Beebe. How are you, sir?
Hello, smiling sensei. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction. I am doing well. Thank you very much. And as you said, keeping my head above the water, quite literally, it has been we've had quite a lot of April showers here in the greater Cincinnati area the past few weeks. And yeah. As you know,
yeah,
because you got to see some of the effects.
Yeah, we
and drive through.
Yeah, we got to go to Cincinnati and we on our way to Philadelphia, and it rained on us the entire drive. This is the largest storm I think I've seen in a long while. It was like it was the size, definitely half the size of the U.S., and it followed us the entire time and dumped buckets the whole time. You know, like we got no reprieve at all the entire time. So by the time we got to Cincinnati, dude, we were like, white knuckling the whole time. Couple of scary moments. We had a guy in St. Louis that tried to run us off the road. Dumb kid, just wasn't paying attention, type thing. But dude, we got to you, and we had such a good time. It's always such a pleasure when we have time to actually see each other face to face. And we went to a really cool brewery and got some pretty good pizza, man. I wasn't expecting much, and it was really good, really good. And had some solid beers. Man, I gotta say, Cincinnati, at least the part that we are in, is such a cute, cool spot. You know, I've been there many times. I just never had the chance to like experience it. And it has that East Coast kind of vibe with the architecture, and like, I love that, you know, all the homes are kind of smushed together and old, and you know, the history. It's just, we had such a good time, man.
Yeah, it's got that East Coast vibe because it's an old city. It's, you know, built in these 1700s, if earlier, 1700s. But it's been around for quite a while, and it has that a lot of German influence from, you know, around then the people who settled here, and it's got that East Coast vibe, but Midwest personality.
Yeah, people are great, dude. How many times was I like, dude, people are so great here? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, not that people aren't great everywhere, but it was just like everybody we ran into was so kind, you know, overly kind in a good way. And
yeah,
I can see why you like it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very relaxed kind of place, you know, it's very comfy. It's all about that.
Right. Right.
And, you know, it's not too exciting, but it's exciting enough if you want it to be.
Sure.
You know.
Well, you guys got, I mean, there's clubs down there. I mean, I've played, you know, Cincinnati a bunch, and there's always something to do, it seems like. But yeah, we had a great time, and we left, and we went out to Philadelphia to a convention. My partner Justin and I did. And dude, I did the tourist thing. We were staying downtown, and I got to go to Independence Hall and took a little tour, and then we did the Liberty Bell, and then we did Ben Franklin's house, which is no longer there, but it's a museum now. I got to say, man, being in Independence Hall, you're just sort of like, you're just enveloped with this spirit of how amazing this country is and how those people were able to put something together. And you know, Independence Hall itself is very cool. It's where they signed the Declaration. But when we went over to, I think it's Congressional Hall, it's right across, just like a stone's throw away. The lady was talking about it. You go in there, and it's still all set up the way that it was. And she was like, as cool as Independence Hall is, this is maybe more important because this is where they drafted the Bill of Rights, and they, you know, they debated for months and months of how are we going to make this thing work. And it was just so cool, man. You know, I've never done that. I never really had time to do the tourist thing. We did that. And then, of course, the Liberty Bell was cool. But Ben Franklin, that guy was amazing. He's an inventor. He was a man before his time. He did so many things. You know, I didn't know that he invented the bifocal. And among other things, they had the printing press set up, and they showed how that worked. And like, you talk about a wild thing, you know, having to put together, you know, you're basically putting together sentences backwards, you know, in order to print the paper. They show you how it's all done, and like, you had to do it quick, you know. So they were like, you know, they were pumping these things out, and you had to be on your game, man. It was cool. It was just amazing, man. It was a cool thing to experience. Philadelphia itself is great. A lot of great places to eat where we were. I did see a guy get maced in the face at CVS stealing some Monster drinks. You always gotta see something.
That seems like a very Philadelphia story. I've got friends that live in Philadelphia, and that seems like a very Philadelphia story.
Oh man, yeah. So I was out there, you know, and then we make our way back. Then my wife and my daughter go out there, and they stay in the same hotel that we were staying. So my daughter is a diehard Psych fan, which is this comedy show that was on for, you know, a while back.
Yes. USA Network is one of their originals. They did really, like, it did well for not being network TV.
Yeah.
And it's got a huge, hardcore, dedicated fan base. Yeah. Dude,
there's like 1,200 people there for this thing.
Holy shit, for PsychCon.
Yeah, huh? 3 days. 3 day convention. Wow. And they had such a good time. They had a blast, man. They got to meet all the cast. Everybody was there, and they had panels and stuff that you could go sit in on, and like they would talk about how they made the show and all that kind of stuff. So, but I was like, I wasn't sure where they were staying, and then they get there, and I'm like, holy shit, you stayed where we were. We were in the same spot, you know? So that's kind of weird.
What was the, like, how many days apart did you miss each other?
Like, I came home. I was back on Thursday night. They left Friday morning. So,
oh wow, okay.
So yeah, I mean, I saw them for 2 seconds, basically.
Yeah, but still,
it's crazy.
Within 24 hours, they're in the same hotel.
Yeah, the downtown Marriott, dude. You know, but I did get to eat one cheesesteak. God dang it, I wanted more, but we were just too busy, and all the good spots are hard to get to. So anyway, had a great time, had a great trip. Loved hanging out with you. Always a good time. And now we're back for more. We've got a great episode today. We sat down with just a wonderful human being. And Shivani was, what an amazing story. Her life is incredible.
Yes, absolutely. And we do want to issue a trigger warning for suicide at this point, if that is a difficult subject for you to listen to or deal with. That's totally fine. You'll maybe want to join us back next week when we'll be back. But otherwise, we had a really incredible conversation with Shivani, and let's go ahead and hop to it. Thank you so much for joining us, Shivani, here in Weirdsville. What's your weird story?
Well, it starts back when I was about 12 years old, and it's kind of sad. What triggered my weird story is I was 12, and my sister, who was 18, ended her life. And all of a sudden, all sorts of very unusual things began happening in my world. The first was when the police officer and the woman from our church came to talk to my parents about it, I literally saw this dark cloud seeping over everything, and it was just like engulfing. I didn't really know what it was, so I, went and kind of was close to find out. They did tell us, and I remember as they were telling us, that dark cloud got heavier and heavier, so I put my shoes, and I just started running. Wow. Yeah, we lived way out in the country, so there was nowhere for me to run to. And then as I was running out into our fields, our hay fields, something felt like it grabbed my feet, and I just face planted on the ground. So that was like the first, okay, something bigger is going on here. I think I just, brushed it off at the time. But then the very next day, I was up in my room, and there was a gift that my sister had given me. I don't know if you guys remember going to the fair in the old days, but they had these stretched out bottle, like it was a glass bottle, and then they stretched them out. So it was like really thin.
Yeah.
In
the
center. And she had put things in it like money, gem, little gems or beads or whatever. And I looked down on the floor and I saw a piece of glass on the floor, and it was the same green as the 7-Up bottle that was stretched. And so that was really weird because, you would think if it was broken, it wouldn't be sitting up, but it was. And that one little glass piece led me to the center of the very thinnest part of the bottle. And it was like there was an explosion from the inside of that bottle, and that one little piece had come out and fallen on the floor.
Wow.
So that one made me scratch my head like, okay. And after that, I remember everybody being very critical about whether she had like actually gone to heaven, because, I was Catholic, and that was like that she wouldn't, that she was condemned to eternity in purgatory or something like that. Right. So I remember like the good little Catholic girl I was and asking if she's in with you, God, then just make it rain tomorrow. It was the middle of the summer and it was really hot, and we had had kind of a lot of dry weather, and it did. It just started pouring down rain. Wow. So that was all the start of it. And her presence stayed with me. I will say, I will give her credit for it. I do know that there was probably a lot more spiritual evolution in it for me, but it stayed with me for quite some time. The next really impactful moment was as a senior. So then I was 17, 5 years later, I had begun being, a little wild. I think that that's what you do when you're a child from trauma.
Sure.
Yeah, so I was had been drinking with a friend of mine, and we both needed to take our cars home. So I was ahead because I was a little bit more intoxicated, and she wanted to make sure I stayed on the road. I went around a really sharp corner, and I remember even having the thought, like, I don't really care if I make it around that corner. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, something shoved me to the passenger seat. I had a 66 Chevy Malibu that was my car. So yeah. And I was shoved to the passenger seat, but I was holding on to the steering wheel, and that's what pulled me around that corner. And so that was my part of the story. And when I talked to my friend later, she said she watched that she couldn't see what it was, but something had moved me across because I should have went the opposite direction. The car and all of the momentum was going in the complete opposite direction.
Wow. Wow.
So that, yeah, pretty amazing, impactful story.
Yeah.
So you felt something pull you over to the other side or push you or...
Yeah, I felt like I was pushed across the scene. Wow. Like, no, this is you. You need to stop that. That's not what your your life is meant for. You need to keep going.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And how, like, you said that you felt her with you. Like, in what ways, outside of this thing that happened? Like, what are some of the small things that you would feel or? Was it more of like in your mind you would sort of like sense something or how was that?
Yeah, I would say that it's hard for me to pull all the little details from that time because we're talking, 30 plus years ago.
Right.
So those ones are hard for me to retain the little presence. Eventually, as I continued on in my life, I found that presence that I attributed to her that helped me through that moment surfaced again multiple different times. And all I can say is that there are experiences where there's just such a strong inner knowing that I'm not alone. And the problem that I have, even though everybody else cannot understand what it is on a logical, in a logical level, that the decisions that I needed to make was a strong knowing on the inside, and they always worked out to my benefit when I made those choices, when I followed that intuition or that strong knowing.
Wow. Mm. Did you ever talk about this with your parents at all, or?
That experience as a young one, no, because my parents at that time, and I feel like that's, also when I look back in the grand scheme of things, this presence in my life was the thing that helped nourish me during those very challenging years because my parents were very traumatized where we were.
Sure.
In their mind, we were this perfect family. In my mind, we were this perfect family. And then, her choice pretty much set everybody in this, whirlwind.
Sure.
And I feel like that was that darkness that I saw.
For sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
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 Definitely.
That's a heavy, I can't even imagine. I'm a parent myself. I can't even imagine what that would be like. Somebody said to me years ago that, like you're only as happy as your saddest child or whatever, that sort of thing. And like, that's very real. And like to have something like that happen, you may or may not have known that your child was going through something, but like it's personified to the point to where you can't outrun it right now. And it's like in your face that something was going on and that just must be an awful feeling. And, man, that, I feel for your parents. I feel for you and everybody that had to deal with that. That's tough. That's real tough.
Yeah, especially at such a young age within your family, within the family alone. Because that's one of the things with suicide is that a lot of times people just don't see it coming. They don't know. They don't know whatever's going on, the internal struggles of the person who's there, and unfortunately dies that way. And that's one of the worst things about it is that it seems like, it seems like the solution for the person. But it's also unfortunate how that they are unable to see what happens afterwards. And, and maybe her coming and kind of lingering around and helping you afterwards was her kind of like, oh, I need to do this. I messed up on that, because it's often it's the family and the friends who hurt and are confused and left with all those sadness and the great confusion that goes along with it. And I can understand how, I mean, I don't have kids, but I can understand how that could really, I mean, just destroy families and destroy, you know, relationships because of, you know, the not knowing and the guilt and all of those terrible things that black cloud that was coming around that you saw invade your space. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because what was interesting, and I loved that you said that, you know, like that presence that was hanging around me at that time was making a big enough impact on my psyche that there's, you know, there's something a little bit more and, you know, that obviously that was going to be something that would affect the rest of my life. And there still are, you know, there are things that I'm drawn to for that reason. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is when I began really seeing the family dynamics that had happened as a result of the trauma, you know, like what you're talking about, that guilt, the shame, the fear, like, mm-hmm. okay, maybe I should have done. So now I'm going to overdo with all of the close family, and things got way too attached. And, mm-hmm. you know, like people didn't like our family members. We wanted to live our own lives, but we couldn't because everybody was like too afraid. What's interesting is that when I started becoming aware of that, one of the things that I ended up kind of being inspired to do was train and run a marathon. Wow. And that led to the next experience that I had, which was actually an out-of-body experience. I was training for that marathon. The only word that I can think is exaltation. Like while I was running, I would get the runner's high. Mm-hmm. I would feel very connected to nature and all of that thing. Well, I had a medical condition that involved me needing to rest for a weekend. I had to take some medicine for that weekend. And I was married at the time. And my husband asked me to help him with a project, which was these huge built-in shelves in our garage. And we wanted to get rid of them to create some more, you know, just more fluidity. But they were huge built-in. And so his idea was to pull them off the wall, let them fall to the floor, and then take them apart. So I was a little bit under the weather with this whole medical thing, but all he needed was a second hand to get it going, right? And he said to me, do make sure you move your body out of the way, move your feet out of the way. So, you know, we go, and it was like my foot was glued to the floor when the shelving mm-hmm. unit came. It slammed down on my foot, and right away, boom, I was just out of my body. And I was back there like I saw it there. I saw him reacting. I saw the frozen body. I couldn't even say anything, you know, like ow or anything, because I was just not in it. And that one was also like, okay, so there is something more here. We're not just our physical bodies. We're not trapped in our physical bodies the way, you know, a lot of people think that we are. Mm-hmm. And it took quite a while. In fact, my husband became aware of the whole thing. He got my foot out. He took me to the hospital. And it wasn't until I had been in the hospital for some period of time that all of a sudden I started feeling again. I was, you know, like in it, in my body again. And that's, wow. The nurse was like, you look like you're uncomfortable. I'm like, yeah, you know what? This really hurts all of a sudden. And then they finally gave me some pain medicine, but I was just, you know, I was so detached from that entire experience.
Wow.
I did end up finishing the marathon and running it, even with the foot thing.
Wow. I mean, that's a feat. No pun intended. Dang. You know, you hear stories about that, out-of-body experiences and things like that. I have no doubt that there is certainly more than meets the eye when it comes to what we can perceive as our body, our spirit, whatever. And it sounds like you had a guardian angel maybe trying to help in that situation, you know, that is, that's very real, I think. And, Did you break your foot?
Yeah, so I broke a couple of the metatarsals across the top of my foot.
Oh, God. That's got to be extremely painful. I'm pretty clumsy, so I twisted my ankles a lot and hurt myself a lot. But I wonder if, like, you're leaving your body had anything to do with the medication that you were on, because you were like, your consciousness was not all, it seems like it was not all there. It was a little bit off, you know? And I wonder if that was, you know, something that allowed you to kind of be bumped out or jump out, you know, of your body as, like, you know, you're, I don't know, that's an interesting thing, but it's kind of like how the reason I think of that is because we know that there, with chemicals, the, you know, certain medications or, you know, medicines or whatever you want to call them, drugs, whatever, that you can, you know, you essentially can leave your body, but you can also, you know, people leave their bodies through meditation as well, but, you know, but definitely drug-induced kind of things. I wonder if that was a connection to it that allowed you to have that slip out kind of a thing.
I mean, if I was going to give my opinion, I'm not like a professional on all of that, but I definitely think that that was the case. And that continued to be the case as I did get into meditation, is that I carried a lot of that trauma in my body. So I ended up developing an autoimmune disease. And when I was practicing the meditation often, I would have these very big, I don't know that I ever went outside of my body again, but there would be times when I would just be in such excruciating pain that all of a sudden everything would go almost like black, not like the dark cloud, but just like black. And then all I could see was the connection between my inner self and everything else outside of me.
Oh, wow.
And pain isn't supposed to be the one that allows you to do that. But for whatever reason, that's my karma that's go around. But, you know, these painful experiences is what's leading me to discover that the interconnectedness, like you were talking about, a lot of people will do this, you know, maybe acid or mushrooms or something like that, that then they begin to see how we truly are connected as as what I know now as consciousness, and that there is just one, and then it takes form, and that's what, you know, this meat sack is and your guys is and all of that. Our little experience and all of that. But at the time I didn't know those things. So as I was having, you know, now a new tool that was helping me access those deeper, more subtle levels of my mind, but then the pain pushing me into these deep experiences.
Sure.
It is unusual, but it makes sense to me that pain would be an activator, because the different ways the body responds to pain, people that will pass out because they're in too much pain or they can't handle it or whatever. It's a nervous system awakening and like just going crazy. And, you know, if you're connected to your nervous system spiritually or your consciousness or whatever, that's like, it's almost like somebody's like fidgeting with a knob on a radio trying to tune something in, and you feel, you know, and it's like, you know, you're hitting all these things, and maybe that's like one of those stations, you're able to take one of these stations and like, you know, this way to get out and to experience and to step back and see the broader thing and like to tune into the bigger picture. Because yeah, normally I think it would be people focus on the pain rather than the pain, you know, like kind of pushing it out being a gateway or something. So that is very interesting to me.
Yeah. There's a lot of like ancient civilizations that used pain to reach heights. of enlightenment or whatever. I'm thinking about the ritual of becoming a brave in Native American culture, where they would like hang from a tree and they would put they would put hooks through their body, and that was supposed to induce some sort of enlightenment. I had heard about somebody who's Native American and his father passed away, and to mourn him, he did that. And apparently it was an awakening moment. You know, your body's capable of producing a bunch of different types of chemicals and things, you know, DMT and THC and all these things that I think a lot of times, like when people are trying to reach enlightenment or whatever, and they first find it through psychedelics or things like that, because they don't understand how to open their mind up without hallucinogens. But if you talk to people that are like very devout, like Buddhists or people that take meditation seriously, they'll tell you that they can reach those same hallucinogenic sort of conscious, you know, levels without these chemicals. But it is interesting. And so how, like through all this process and you being a Catholic, like did some of these experiences either reinforce your religiosity or did it send you into a different direction? You know, like Ab and I both grew up in a very conservative religious part of the world, and we both went out into the world and discovered that there are other ways to look at these things. It's not that the way that we were brought up was it was bad. It's just there's different ways that there's different tools that people can use from all kinds of places to get the information or to get where they need to go that way.
Yeah, it definitely took me the opposite direction. Like I said, I think that impact of seeing that, well, in my small community, it was a very small community, and my sister was a very, very important young individual, and everybody loved her. She was an overachiever. She had a super high IQ, all of those sorts of things. So it's almost like they changed the dogma. They changed the rules to suit her. And that was the first time I was like, wait a second. So if this is supposed to be absolute truth, and now we're going to change some things because it will make us feel more comfortable, that really began making me question. I went way into monetary, like just money. I didn't care about anything. I didn't believe in spirituality. And it was shortly after I ran that marathon and I completed that, like, I can get away from this. I can get away from the darkness. That's when I started finding and exploring other traditions. I spent 13 years as a monk when I found the meditation practice that suited me the best. And that's where a lot of that, I was kind of processing a lot of that pain. Most of my life was in service. I didn't care about money at all. So I went one way to the opposite. And then it was, once again, my body was leading me to discover a more stable way. So, you know, oftentimes that's what I mean. Like when it comes to meditation, we're not attempting to have these painful, dramatic. In fact, you're trying to bring a lot of peace and stillness and having the physiology just line up if we're tuning it right, you know, that you want it just a beautiful sweet spot. You don't want to have that extreme where it's throwing you. So that's eventually what I ended up doing and am continuing to do is find in integrating practices, daily practices in my life that bring my physiology into perfect balance, and so that these experiences are more sustainable and they're less dramatic and no pain.
Right.
So you know, if I learned anything, maybe I can add that to somebody else that it would not be a painful experience at all.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, it's hard to be spiritual and be overly emotional one way or the other. You know, it's, you can't find that spot that you're talking about, that sweet spot of like being calm, being able to receive whatever that is, information or a sense of well-being. Or I think a lot of the human experience is trying to find your way in the world and how you fit into that. And when you have something so traumatic as you did at such a young age, that can send people into a tailspin, and they either strive to come out of that or it consumes them. And when you get to be an adult, it gets to be more difficult because you don't have, you know, people in your lives a lot of times that can balance you and help you figure that out. And you can start to reach for substances to numb the pain, because it's very difficult to deal with hard things in your life when you have to look at, you have to look at them face to face and say, I cannot outrun this, and this is going to consume me. So I can either bury it with substance, or I can try to dig my way out, which is very, you know, that's a brave thing to do. And I think it's interesting that you chose running to get yourself to the point. Like, there is something amazing about using your body to do something very difficult, because it puts your mind and your body on the same page. And you can use that as a tool to bring yourself out of something. Maybe you can look at things maybe a little bit differently than you could. A lot of times people that get consumed with drugs and alcohol, they're unable to get themselves out of that situation because they want the easy route, you know, and that's an easy route. I mean, it doesn't end up being easy, but it starts being pretty easy. All I got to do is take this pill, drink this liquid, and I'm rid of, you know, this thing. But doing things soberly and doing things in a way where your presence very dark, that's very hard to do, you know.
Oh yeah, then there's the fact that when you are abusing substances, you're drinking or you're using drugs or whatever, you know, or even overeating, whatever.
Right.
You're escaping, and you're not, and you're numbing, but you are not processing. And when you're doing something with like running, you know, you're, especially when you get to into the flow state, you know, like you do, like if you, like athletes get into the flow state, artists get into that flow state, that space where you're shut off from everything else and you are just in the moment in what you're doing. And you know, that allows you to really just kind of, you know, that's the flow. That allows you to ride out the moment, and it brings you, and it kind of centers you, and you're able to do the things that are helping you process, whether you're conscious of it or not. And so that makes it very much sense to me that running would be an activity for to help people that, you know, who you know physically can do to do, because I mean, you're literally, in a sense, you're running away from your problems, but you're not. You're actually running into them, and you're processing them, and you're getting that, you know, you're entering into that flow state, that runner's high, that euphoric thing where your body is creating
right.
Those
and you're operating such a high level. You can problem solve when you're going through that. That's a lot of time to think, you know. Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, and for me, symbolically, it was that, I couldn't, like, something stopped me before. So at that moment when I was capable, and, you know, then the broken foot, that could have undermined But instead, I kept going. I didn't attempt to, like, eat a whole elephant at once. I trained for that. I worked for that. And when I accomplished that, you know, that was showing me that I can overcome this. I can find. And, you know, that was one thing. And then there was the next, and then the next, and then the next. And again, ultimately, from that moment, it has always been about finding greater balance within my physiology. Because, Barry, you had said it, when your physiology, when your mind and body are working in harmony, that's not only where the mental clarity comes in, but if you are seeking. So I've had these like powerful spiritual experiences, right? So I wanted more of them. And when I was able to begin to find, okay, so what I need to do is bring mind and body into like harmony, that's the sweet spot, then I'm more likely to hear, to have that knowing inside of me. You know, maybe I don't need it on a day-to-day basis, but there are times when you need to know, you know, you just need to know what is the right direction. And having that connection, having that, like, yes, this is a download, this is the direction I'm going to go. And I know it, you know,
right.
That kind of that. When we discipline ourselves to have that, then it's easier, and it's not so, like I said, it's not painful because it's not on accident. It's something that you begin consciously creating for yourself.
Right. Do you, for lack of a better term, do you communicate with your sister, or have you put that to rest, or where are you with that?
You know, a funny thing. So I am, a coach that uses Ayurveda, which is the ancient Indian preventative medicine, to help individuals, usually women who are successful women, find greater balance and, you know, all of that. So I drew a young woman who has the same name as the sister who ended her life. She also was born in the same year as my sister, and she's also struggled with a lot of those she attempted but failed at ending her life. She also has a lot of the other, you know, things that I remember about her. And I think that it's really a very interesting time in my life. So where she was, you know, who I remembered her to be, now I feel like her spirit is showing itself in a different potential. I don't know how much you guys have come across things like, oh, goodness, let me see if I can remember. Like Seth, Jane Roberts wrote about it. And one of the things in one of those books is really beautiful because he's talking about how all potential realities always do exist. Mm-hmm. You know, like anytime you come to a Y in the road, every part of you goes on every one of those Ys.
Right.
Yeah.
And at all times, there all of that information is coming back to you if you will receive it. And so here in my life, you know, 30 years later, 30 plus years later, I have a woman in my life who is very much the same energy, all of that, and just amazing, beautiful woman. And what we're doing together is everything that I've learned from that trauma is now going to this woman to help her take the next step in her evolution. So it is kind of cool in that sense.
That's
amazing. Do I see it? No, I see it as the omnipotent wisdom that is consciousness that underlies it, permeates all things.
Right. That's incredibly interesting because it's like, and I think as a young person too, especially growing up the way that we did, and I'm putting you in the category of Adam and I, because we all experienced that, you're led into a pretty narrow way of viewing things. And as a kid, it's hard to see outside of that. It's hard to see how somebody could be going through something so difficult when you're told that you got one answer here that could solve all your problems. You know, and I feel for your sister because I know that she must have been dealing with some really difficult things and not having the language or the ability to put, because nowadays, I mean, we're getting better at putting it out there that help is out there if you're able to seek it, you know, but back then it was much more difficult and people didn't want to talk about mental issues or anything like that. And we,
you just wouldn't do that.
Right.
You wouldn't talk amongst your family. You wouldn't talk to your friends. You just, you know, it was verboten, you know, you just did not talk about anything like that. And because, you know, even back, you know, in the '90s, whatever, you know, it was still like, if you saw a psychiatrist, you were still, you know, but fortunately that has been there's been a huge movement and development and push towards understanding and mental health understanding in particular, and the various ways that you can nourish your mental health, various practices, because it's not just one answer. You know, we've been very fortunate for that, but like you were saying, it was just, you know, it was very much a personal inner fight that you couldn't even tell your best, closest, dearest friends about.
Right. Yeah. Cause you'd be judged, or, you know, how could you have these thoughts or these feelings, you know? It's just like, you know, and I remember having a conversation, I think with my dad or somebody a while, like this is when I was growing up, and I asked them about suicide, you know, it's like, how does God look at that? And it's like, the answer that I got, which I thought was a pretty good one, was that, you know, God understands the problems that you're going through, and there's mercy in that, you know, and that may not have been the slogan of the day, but I think that makes more sense to me, that, like, you know, we all have sicknesses in, you know, physical form or mental form that, and as we evolve into this creature now that doesn't have, that we don't have to go out and chop our trees down to burn wood to get warm. You know, a lot of our day is like in front of a computer, and like, we're losing some of that sense of what it means to have a purpose in that. And we have to evolve into something different. We're facing even more mental problems. You see that in our country right now, unfortunately. You see it being put in our face, where we're forced to look at what we're creating here. And, you know, it's sad, but hopefully we can turn the corner. And I think spirituality is definitely a key to that. Understand that we belong to something more. You know, you don't have to go on a DMT trip to figure that out. but if you do, great. You know, if whatever gets you there, in my opinion, then that, as long as you're not harming anybody, then good. You know, but yeah, these are difficult things, you know.
It's interesting that you say that, because one of the other things that I do with my life now is I help at a crisis center on the weekends. So I spend about 24 hours, you know, two 12-hour shifts there. And the thing that I've learned, because, you know, part of my attraction to it was beginning to face some of these things, like, what would I have to say to offer somebody who is abusing drugs, and maybe they're coming to a place where it's destroying their body, or that is considering ending their life. You know, what would I say? What would I do with that? And it's so beautiful, because one of the hands down, every time, it works every single time, is if I'm present and I care about their story. I want to hear it, and I do not judge, and I don't care what they do or what direction they go. And then I value them and tell them how important they are. And then the other added gift is I let them know that I had to walk through the flip side of somebody who chose not to engage and help. And that did impact my life. So if you think that you're helping anybody by doing this, I want you to know that that isn't true, that you will help them so much more by, if they can't listen to you, if they can't honor you, if they can't, you know, like, embrace whatever your reality is, find somebody who can and go down that road. You know, they will be much happier in the long run.
Sure. Yeah. And sometimes people just need somebody to hear them, and not just listen, but to hear them. And I think that there a lot of us are not able to do that. We're not, you know, I mean, we don't have there are people who have the innate ability to hear and to listen and be listeners and hearers and communicate and be that sympathetic ear for someone who needs it and that guidance, you know, or even just to be that person, you know, that allows them to release a lot of this pent up, you know, anxiety or trauma or whatever. But you know, sometimes you can't take that to your closest friends. Your closest friends are not able to understand that. They're not able to be that person for you as much as you would like that person to be. It's not their fault. It's just that they don't have that ability. They don't have that capability. Your family or your friends or your partner or whoever. Sometimes you just absolutely need a stranger. You know, but somebody who can hear and listen and hear and you know, give you more. For lack of a better term, a more educated response, a more knowing response, a personal response. You know, because I mean, it's a permanent solution for a temporary problem. And it's, you know, and it creates the wake of the loss, creates such a huge pain and scar on people. You know, that it's selfish. It's, you know, it's understandable that when people get to that point to where they feel there's no way out except to just completely end it. And that's the, you know, and that's hopelessness, and you just got to have, even just having somebody there to listen and hear you to give you just a glimmer of hope, because hope is like an ember. And if you let it continue to burn, it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger and brighter. And you will be able to eventually, you know, create the light that'll bring you out of that darkness. I'm really just impressed with what I just said.
Sorry. That was good. No, it was like, great.
Wow. Where did that come from?
It was great. yeah, no, I mean, you're so qualified to talk to folks like that. I think that's a great thing.
I did actually have to learn a lot. So I love that you brought that up, Adam, as when I went in there, I had my own trauma that I had to face. And then I had to learn how to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, like really remove myself. And that I feel like that's what happens in our personal relationships, is that we become so comfortable, it's hard to remove yourself. So that was one of the skills that I actually spent a lot of time with the clinic lead to help me do that. So I agree that we can't just go around being like, I'm there for you. But if you don't, if you're not understanding the nuances, then they're some. So, you know, it's great to listen, and it's great to be a safe space that isn't judgmental. But if somebody's talking about that, it's also great to pull in professionals.
Yep.
You know, I'm not a licensed psychologist, but I work with them. And so I get to do the spiritual part, and they are doing the more medical part. And then they will be going into long-term treatment. I'm just there for the crisis, you know, that kind of thing. I love that you brought that forward.
That's great. Phenomenal. So what are you doing now as far as like helping people? Like what are the steps that you go through if someone comes to you and they're having, you know, they're dealing with whatever? I mean, where do you start?
Yeah. So typically, because I do prefer to be a coach, I allow everybody to lead me. I do have, you know, I'm almost completed my master's. I'll get it this June.
Nice.
Awesome.
In the ancient foundation. And it basically, this preventative medicine is, if your body's in balance, then all of your physiology works well, and you will, you know, you won't have the same sort of depression or anxiety. Mm-hmm. All of those things are just non-existent. So essentially, that's a big chunk to bite off, especially here in the West, where we are pretty much all the time marketed to do things that go against that perfect balance.
Yeah.
So I allow them to lead me in a way that I can gently begin to integrate the, you know, ideal daily routine, something like that. Our physiology needs regularity. That's what helps us then handle things when they go out of whack. So the more that we can do that, it's like building those muscles, like if we were going to run, you know, same sort of thing. And then it's very unique because each person is unique. So if there was other aspects of the preventative medicine that I offer, then that is all very individualized. So there is no cookie cutter, which means that most of the time, like, you can learn basic things, mm-hmm. but if you're really going to progress, you do need somebody to walk you through and make sure, because one of the things that is beautiful and I loved it again. You guys had said something about, like, when somebody does this, then it impacts the family around them, but it impacts generations. Right, so yeah. You might not even be aware of things, you know, if your mother or grandmother was raped, you might still be carrying that trauma in your physiology and you have no idea why, and you're reacting, yeah. and you're behaving a certain way. So, each individual kind of needs that support to help really refine it. Otherwise, old habits have a way of seeping back in and you're right back in the same boat. So
sure. Sure.
So you're a coach and you, how did you get to, I know there's a path between on your spiritual journey from where you were, I guess, drifted away from the Catholic Church to where you've discovered, you said you became a monk. What was that road? How did that happen? What was that path? If that's an easy answer.
Yeah. So I had, it was just my, at that time, I feel like it was probably, an intuition that my marriage was kind of starting to go down the drain and I was mm-hmm. looking, and while I was looking, my sister, who's just 2 years older than me, has a way of looking for me. And she found a meditation practice. She handed it over to me. And the very first weekend that I learned that, actually the very first time I learned it, I started having that runner's high with just the view of these meditation techniques. By the end of the weekend, I was having that very consistently on my own without having to do a lot of physical things. So that's what, like, there was no, I mean, hands down, I was headed yeah. in that direction. So then I went to a 6-month training where all I did was meditate for 6 months, you know, like 18, 20 hours a day. That's all I did.
Wow.
After that, I lived a life of service, but then my body was letting me know it was time. Once again, I needed to take this to a different level. I have had a lot of inflammation in my body and, it was causing, IBD, we'll just say, in that I didn't know what it was. Later, I did find that it was Crohn's disease. But all of that led me to then, well, I love the Eastern traditions. I taught yoga before I did all of this other stuff. So I enrolled in the school to learn Ayurveda. And through that, it's been about 5 years, through that, over that journey, I've spent time, more and more time understanding that connection between our physiology and our brain. So you can do meditation and you can expand your conscious awareness, but you may not be able to hang on to it, especially if your body's in the state that mine was in. Mm. I could have amazing experiences, but then boom, they were gone. And then through understanding how to, through discipline, refine my physiology, that's where all of this has become much more stabilized. And as of last weekend, I was finally able to remove Western medicines because I've come to a place where I'm confident now in all of the balance that I and my commitment to that balance mm-hmm. in the future days that I will be able to maintain stability. So the things that I was doing wrong. In Ayurveda, they call it pragya prad, or a mistake of the intellect, where we unknowingly do things that harm our body. So through that, I've unwound all of that in my system and got to a place where I feel confident in a peace, calm, objective way, not forcing, because boy, did I do that and I messed that one up, to where I could be in a stable place and then recognize as soon as anything started going off to come bring myself back to what I know works.
Wow. Are you, when you talk about these things, are you talking about like proper dieting and those types of things also? Is that?
Yeah. So diet plays an effect, but all of our senses. So the things that we take in through our sight, like you were talking about, if you spend all the time on the computer, and then if you're on social media, for example, you know, there's studies, they know that the depression rates are skyrocketing since that. Invention and or the types of entertainment that we engage in, that there are, and again, this is individual, so I'm not going to say what is good and what's bad. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. But if it's causing physiological reactions while you're doing that, and those physiological reactions are then adding to the problem, which anything that creates anxiety, panic, any of that stuff in my physiology, I have to avoid. It's not that I can't be in those situations, but when I avoid them, you know, 90-95% of my time, then I can handle them very easily. Like I go into a crisis every weekend and I have no problem with that because I maintain that. So what we take in through, but even our senses, if we're in places that are overly scented or things like that, or bad scent, what we hear in our ears, touch. So some people have way too much touch and others will, you know, recoil and won't be touched. There needs to be a perfect amount of that in our physiology.
That's cool. Using all the senses, getting everything in balance, man, that's.
It's going to be some really intense and focused work that you've had to really, really do, pour into that. I mean, obviously you did because you became a monk for years and you meditated for, you know, for so long and were able, you adjusted your life to do that. But then, you know, I mean, it's reflecting back. It's you're able to, you know, use this lifestyle or this, the way that you live to live and be healthy. And then that's, you know, that's what ultimately we should all be attempting to do, is try to, you know, live our most healthy life so that we can really live or something.
Yeah, but the thing is that if I can give any advice, I love to, take it slow one step. Because that was my biggest mistake. And if, you know, like I said, I love to save others from suffering. And I would beat my head against the wall. I will do this. I'm gonna, you know. And, you know, it's part of my personality, but it is something that I've learned to keep in check. Because you can still have that passion in your heart for that end goal and take one step at a time. Yeah. You know, learn one new thing, one new good habit in a month or in a year. Right. That's going to make such a difference in the long run than, you know, trying to fit some ideal.
That's the Western way, right? Exactly. We're here in the West. It's particularly in the States. We want it instantly. We want it today. We want it or tomorrow, next week, or whatever. We don't want to have to wait. Unfortunately, we become that. You know, especially in the past years. I mean, you know, obviously you can get something from, you know, Amazon same day or two, you know, whereas you used to have to send a check off in the mail and it took 6 to 8 weeks just to get whatever little thing that, you know, you had ordered from the back of a cereal box. You know, it's, you had to have patience, and now we're at a lack of patience. People just expect to get it when they want it. And that's why, and you see that reflect in a lot of society, a lot of, you know, the, these, Karen videos on YouTube and such, you know, people getting so upset because, they want what they want and they should be pandered to because they expect to be pandered to. They expect their desires to be instantly fulfilled because in some aspect of their life, in their commercialism life, that they can tap into and get that satisfaction. Whereas, you know, that's not how the world works. That's not how the universe works. It's not centric to them. It's you know, they're but a microcosm, micro, a mote of dust in the sea of the whatever eternity. I lost myself on that one, but yeah. So, what you're doing is amazing that you, the process and where you are, and you can to have arrived. But you put in the work and it shows, and that's the important thing.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say I've arrived. I feel like I'm a baby. So,
no, you know, I mean, even a novice to some is the, you know, a wizard to the others, you know, I mean, every level of education is something to aspire to for someone else. So, you know, and it's, just, you know, I mean, and that's a good thing in life too, is to be able to be an example for somebody, you know, especially a positive example. And you are doing that, and you are serving, being, you know, service minded and everything. And that's, you know, again, you know, I guess, you know, if we're talking karma, I mean, that's, you know, that's weighing heavily in your balance, and that's, you know, building up in a good way. What you're going to have karma to burn.
Right. You know? Or I'm going to spend the rest of my life making up for the karma I already burned.
Right. Well,
we've all done that.
Right. How can people get in touch with you, and what do you have going on that you would like people to know about? Anything you'd like to plug?
You could visit my website, which is exploreyogahealth.com. And what I'm currently working on, that it's very small and it's new, but I have a community there that I'm pulling other wellness professionals together, because I don't feel like I have all the answers for everybody. So I want to have this resource where individuals can pull from a variety of different thoughts. If you are one of those people, reach out to me. Everything's on that website. Let me know so I can get you into that resource. So that, you know, people can begin finding what resonates with them and whatever path they need to follow.
Sure. That's great. Yeah, it is. I became a martial arts instructor, and I remember, like, when I was given the okay to do that, I thought the same thing. How am I going to teach anybody anything? You know, but the thing is you know more than the person walking in the door, and through the discipline, you can help one another grow. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's really about. And you don't have to have all the answers right away. I think we put too much emphasis on that, but it goes back to our early conversation. Just listen, see what that person needs, try to provide that for them. It doesn't mean you have to have all the answers instantaneously, but over time we can engage in a practice that can help each other grow. And through you, I'm learning, you know, through me, you're learning, whatever, you know, we're sharing in an experience together. Which is a little bit different than the way that we see teachers in this part of the world. You know, we're always, you know, teachers got all the answers and all that kind of stuff. And that's great, but it doesn't have to be that way. It can be a symbiotic relationship. So that's a good message to put out there.
Yeah. And somebody who's a parent knows that.
Absolutely.
That little being that they created, they're teaching all sorts of stuff.
Oh, it's going to teach you where your flaws are. What you got to get better at, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. This has been great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And this has been a very, very mindful conversation that I think we've had here, and it's definitely different from our last episode. It's been nice. Yeah. This has been really great. And, we do appreciate you coming on.
Well, I appreciate you guys and allowing people to explore these kind of concepts and ideas, you know.
Yeah, that's great. We'll have you back.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. All right, Shivani, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, you know what we need?
What's that?
We need a new ad for our merch store.
Our merch store.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, just how do we get What's Your Weird Story merch?
Huh. How do we get that What's Your Weird Story merch?
What's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's what's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's correct. Get in touch with us. Go buy some merch. We got some cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? If any of our listeners out there has some really cool ideas or has some really cool What's Your Weird Story type art that they want to see on a t-shirt, get a hold of us. Maybe it'll happen.
Shivani, thank you for coming on and sharing your story. It sounds like her sister's passing sort of opened some doors for her.
Yes. Well, you know, it certainly did in many ways. And it was very obviously a very life-changing moment for not just for her, but for her family, that trauma, that tragedy. But, you know, it did seem that this event really changed her perception on life and on her, you know, her belief system in ways that she didn't realize early on, you know. But like, I mean, I understand that feeling when she said she found out from the police officer and the woman from the church. You know, she just, her instinct was just to, you know, go and just run and just run and run and run.
Yeah.
You know, on the field into where she, you know, and then something just, literally something just grabbed her and stopped her, you know, tripped her up and stopped her and was, you know, and that's kind of like, you know, maybe, you know, maybe it was her sister or some kind of protective spirit that, you know, that the one that she felt kind of later on over the years. But there is, yeah, I understand that. It's not so much that you know, you're wanting to like literally outrun your problems. It's just like sometimes that's really a very basic fight or flight situation. And, you know, you're running, you're fleeing because you don't know how else to process, especially at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think everyone, even though we may not have experienced that ourselves, I think everyone's had those moments in their lives where you get confronted with something horrible and you're meant to face it head on and there's no way around it. And it takes some time to figure those things out. And, there's no handbook for it. You know, of course,
yeah,
people can help you through it, and that's what good friends are for, good families. And all we can try to do is make sense of the things that don't make sense. And she did that. She persevered, mm-hmm. and it sent her down a path where, you know, she really found herself, you know, through meditation, and she became a monk. That's the next level. You know, I think people, I've certainly flirted with that idea once or twice in my life. You know, maybe I'll just go and become a monk but that is it's a life of solitude and a lot of introspection that goes on there. So my hat's off to people that really mm-hmm. do that and delve into it. And it's incredible. And she came out to be someone out there helping people, and it's incredible.
Yeah, but you know, that was, there was more, you know, more trauma and processing and tragedy that she went through before she became before she went on to become the monk or a monk, you know, and that is a big step, and a big transition in life. And that is a big way of pursuing your truth and your knowledge and to find that path. And a lot of us just don't have the patience, the ability, the time to do that. But she made that happen in her life because that was what she needed. And now she's being able to use that to help others, which is really just amazing, really fantastic. And that's, you know, because we all need more people to talk to get counsel from. You know, no man is an island. We need other people, and we need people who have a bit of understanding and who aren't just, you know, talking out of their ass like we do every week.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good point, you know, and anytime we could talk about mental health is a good conversation to have, because there needs to be more of that. And there's a lot of tragedy out there. So, and I know people are going through tough times, and that's just part of the human experience. But yeah, you know, surround yourself with good people and fall on those people and rely on those people, as hard as that is to admit that you might need help. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell you that I would be honored if that were to happen. It's happened a few times in my life, and I always take that very seriously, and I think you'd find the same thing with your friends and family also. So,
you know, it's scary sometimes to ask for help for whatever reason, you know, not just necessarily at the edge of suicide, but just in general. There are a lot of people who just find it scary and difficult to talk about their problems and their feelings and their emotions, and you shouldn't be that way. You know, we're not there anymore. You know, as a culture and as a society, we're very much, we've progressed into mental health awareness and working on mental health. And, you know, it's an important thing, and we're not at the age of just eating it and just keeping it down. You know, it's not just to suck it up anymore. It's not just like keep it to yourself. It's be able to express it and do it. Yeah, and there's a right time and place for everything, obviously. But, you know, if you have the need for help or just to talk to somebody, do it. Seek help. Seek someone to speak to. There's no shame in it.
Yeah.
At all.
Absolutely.
At all.
Absolutely, man. And, yeah, this is, again, a great conversation. You know, we made a new friend, and, you know, it's always such a cool thing to be able to have somebody come on, and you get to know them through our, you know, hour-long discussion. And it makes you really appreciative to the things in your life that you have, and how quickly some of those things can go away. And what's important is that we take the time while we're here to express to one another how we feel about them. You know, that's really, I think, an important thing. So thank you, Shivani, again for coming on. Would love to have her back. I hope you do come back and keep on doing what you're doing. We want to hear from you. If you guys have a story, I mean, everybody's got a story. Come on, let's talk about it. Let's get it out there. Let's just have a conversation, and you'll never know where a conversation will go. We start somewhere, and then sometimes we end up at a place that we look at each other and go, well, that was interesting, you know?
Yeah. Very often, you know, we start talking, and then some pearl of wisdom will just drop out one of our mouths without even realizing it.
Yeah.
Happens to me all the time. I say these things
right.
that are apparently really deep that I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? Because, I mean, I'm not like a, I'm not a shallow pool by any means. I'm deep, man. But sometimes it's even like, where even did I pull that out of?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, again, you know, when you're engaged in a conversation with other people, it enhances all of your senses and you're listening and you're paying attention. And sometimes you say something and it's just, yeah, in the moment. And that's, yeah, what it's all about. You know, that's why we do this podcast, so we can have these conversations. We can have an enlightened moment where it's like, you're just in that moment and somebody says something that sparks something and you're like, oh man, I never thought of it that way. Or, you know, or you made me feel something, you know, that is profound. So it's good all the way around, you know?
Yes. But you know, don't expect it to be so, always be so profound. For,
yeah, they're not. They're not always going to be bangers. We're going to keep, yeah, talking, so, but they may not be great points.
But hey, join us again next week here on the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Follow us on our Instagram and our Facebook. If you go to Instagram, you can actually see a lovely picture from the other weekend when Barry and I were eating pizza. And I was eating pizza. He was having beers, you know. But we both were enjoying what we were having, so, and having, absolutely, a good time.
Absolutely.
So join us here in Weirdsville. Share your stories. Share your emails. Share your memes, whatever. Get a hold of us through the social media, through our website, whatyourweirdstory.com, where all of our episodes are available, all 348 plus some extra ones. Barry, 350, man.
Yeah, it's coming.
That is right. Woo. Down the barrel, man.
Incredible.
It's crazy. But thank you, Weirdsville. You guys are the ones that make this happen. You are why we do this, and we love you guys, and we appreciate all your support and love, and just for, you know, tuning in, listening, and sharing this, the weirdness of this life that we have. Until next time, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.